Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Get behind the wheel of your new Opel at the Opel Open Road event now on at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Football great Lionel Messi has confirmed his move from Barcelona to Paris Saint-Germain. PSG are backed by the seemingly bottomless pockets of Qatar Sports Investments, a subsidiary of a Qatar state-run sovereign wealth fund. But at a time when the pandemic threatens football revenue across Europe, there are some wallets that are still opening wide, it would seem. I'm joined in studio by Gavin Cooney, sports writer with the42.ie, and on the line from Paris by Simon Cooper, Financial Times journalist and author of Barca, the inside story of the world's greatest football club, which is just out this week. Simon Cooper, was there any talk about perhaps putting a question mark in at the end of the book title?
I'd say it's still the world's greatest football club, just not the world's best football club. Mediocre team, incredible club.
And on its financial future, would that not merit a question mark?
Well, I mean, football clubs always survive, even when they go bankrupt. So you can't get more sustainable than that. But yeah, I mean, I think they have very hard years ahead. And the worst case scenario is they do a kind of Leeds United, which some of your listeners will know means that 20 years ago, Leeds sort of went into financial meltdown, sold all the best players, were relegated, and spent long, hard years in the Championship. And so that is not quite as bad as that, but something like that is a possible scenario now. The great years are over.
Okay, for the benefit of those who might have been living on Pluto for the course of the last week, will you just spell out, please, what exactly it is that has been transacted over Lionel Messi?
Yeah, if you've been living on Pluto, last Thursday morning, Messi woke up expecting to sign a new contract for Barcelona at half his pay because the club had huge financial problems, debt of 1.2 billion euros. And that day, Barcelona said, Leo, we can't afford to sign you. Whatever your pay is, we've just completely run out of money. You have to go. He was shocked. And days later, he is now the world's best player, has joined Paris Saint-Germain, and he is staying in a hotel in Paris. And his 20 years at Barcelona have come to an end, and so has the club's sort of most glorious era.
And let's talk a little bit more about the terms on which he's moving there. I mean, it's a fair drop in wages, but he's not going to be suffering.
No, I mean, it seems that net after tax, he's going to be earning about 40 million euros a year, which I think, we'd all say is enough. And he's also getting a signing bonus of 30 million euros. So PSG would have to be paying him about double that. And they're lucky that, you know, normally football has quite strict financial rules about what you can spend. But these have been relaxed post-pandemic when all the clubs made big losses. So they're going to have the world's best attack of Messi, Neymar and Kylian Mbappe.
Perhaps, Gavin, we should turn to you because Simon Cooper is obviously completely unable to give us an objective assessment of the value for money of this deal, given his feelings about Lionel Messi. Does it represent a good deal for PSG?
When you have pockets as deep as Paris Saint-Germain have, I suppose there's no such thing as a waste of money or a bad deal. It works for them because it furthers their status as the most famous club in the world. And I think, obviously, Paris Saint-Germain will exist to win titles and particularly the European Cup, but we know their Qatari owners want them to become a major brand and one of the biggest brands in world sport, to, shall we say, assuage the image of their nation state owners, and this furthers that because Messi is the biggest show in town. I mean, you'd imagine if you're a lowly team in France, you would be terrified by the idea of Messi linking up with Neymar and Mbappe and coming to brutalise your quaint little parochial team in the bottom half of Ligue 1. But they're absolutely thrilled because Messi's coming to town. It means they can jack up their ticket prices, they can sell more corporate boxes, and it keeps them in business.
You've just opened up a very interesting little rabbit hole there. Does the purchase of a football player in Western Europe end up improving the geopolitical image of something of a, well, not pariah state, that's overstating it, a state with a problematic public image?
That's the point. I think that's the point of the whole exercise, isn't it? Because that's why people are quite, I mean, I've seen people describe this move as depressing because it's just Messi, this glorious footballer who, okay, like Barcelona have been sponsored by Qatar Airways as well, and they are primarily responsible for the loss of Messi because they've run themselves like a clown car for years. But the reason that the Qatari owners are investing so much money in Paris Saint-Germain is to improve their image among the Western world, should we say. And it's the reason that they bid for the World Cup and have got it and have moved it to the winter time in 2022. And now we'll have Lionel Messi along with Neymar and Mbappe to splash all over their billboards and make it another gurning face to legitimise the whole... The whole undertaking.
Another gurning face. Does geopolitics come into it in your mind, Simon Cooper?
Absolutely. I mean, Gavin's quite right that the Qataris bought PSG partly to sports wash their image, you know, a country, a monarchy, not a democracy at all, and where hundreds of construction workers have died building the World Cup stadiums. But I think also, you know, if you're the family that owns sort of a state with 10% of the world's oil and gas, why not buy a football club? Why not buy the world's best players and have some fun? So I think there's also a sort of element of boredom and vanity that is part of what they're doing. And, you know, they do want to sports wash their image. And yet here we are talking about Qatar and all of us pointing out the human rights abuses that go on there. So I don't think that these exercises are always completely successful.
Has it and will it, do you think, that money create an asymmetry in football in France? Simon?
Well, there's always been an asymmetry in football everywhere. And in France for 10 years now, Paris Saint-Germain has been much, 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 much richer than the other clubs. I mean, some of the clubs in the French First Division are sort of village clubs. But on the other hand, for the league as a whole, this is considered very good news because this was the fifth league in Europe historically. And they had a huge TV deal collapse last year. So a lot of the clubs are in big financial trouble. Stadiums were empty with the pandemic. And so if you run a kind of village club in the French First Division, you're delighted because not only is Messi going to come and fill your stadium once, but French TV rights are going to sell around the world and people will be talking about the French league in the way they never have. So Paris Saint-Germain is somewhat an engine. And also, I mean, one of the Qatar sort of owns so much of France. It owns a lot of French television rights itself. So Qatar is on both sides of this deal.
Gavin, back to the cost value analysis here. Text on 51551. Messi was great, but he's 34. He's a spent force, says Tom in Cork. Why would you spend 40 million euro on somebody who is in the twilight of their career?
Because he's the best, and his twilight is also a lot more glorious than many players' peaks. He's still, like last season, he was Barcelona's best player by a country mile in a very poor team. We always kind of wonder, if you drop Messi into a really average team, what would he make them? We saw it with Barcelona last year. He won them the domestic cup and made them league title contenders. And Paris Saint-Germain will say, look at the fact that we're talking about it now on Irish radio. Like, it's been the biggest sports story for the past 7 days. Messi's exit broke during the Olympics. That put the Olympic Games in a halfpenny place in terms of the sports media. So it just gets people talking. So that's one of the reasons why. And Messi is still on the field, is still pretty much ethereal. He's slowed down. He doesn't run as much as he used to. He will walk through games, but he's still got what it takes, and he'll dominate the French league still, and we'll still see him making an impact in the Champions League.
Can we be so sure about it? I mean, look at the amount of money that was spent on Jack Grealish and the amount of time that he spent on the bench for England.
Maybe I think that might say more about the England manager than it does anyone else. I mean, I don't think no one is saying that Messi is as good as he used to be, but that was a hell of a high peak, and I would be very surprised if people are at the end of this season turning around saying Messi wasn't worth the money because he didn't deliver, because he is delivering and delivered as recently as a month ago and helped Argentina win the Copa America, the South American continental competition, and they won it for the first time in what, 25 years.
Simon, how do you view the cost value analysis of Mr. Grealish?
Look, Messi and Jack Grealish don't really belong in the same sentence.
Ooh.
And, you know, £100 million for Grealish. I mean, Manchester City have been very well run. Football revenues keep rising, so transfer fees do as well. It's dubious, it's debatable. Messi is actually on a free transfer in the sense that PSG didn't have to pay Barcelona a single euro. It's just salary that they're paying. So which of the two would I rather have signed? I think you know the answer. And Manchester City, had they known 3 days before they signed Grealish, or even 10 seconds before, that Messi was about to come on the market, they might have made a different decision.
That's a good point, isn't it, Gavin?
Yeah, because Manchester City, from the reports,
and they wouldn't have paid as much either.
No, I don't think they. I don't think they would. Although Pep Guardiola, like obviously the great philosopher genius of his time, is very. It's very touchy when you talk about the fact that yes, Pep, obviously you've built great football cathedrals, but you've spent hundreds of millions of euros on them. But he is very touchy when you ask him about it, and he says, "Well, we sold 60 million worth of players, so Jack Grealish is worth only 40. I honestly don't know where he's plucked those numbers from, because maybe Simon is a better mind than mine, but I haven't been able to make those numbers
Pep,
add up.
Pep should stick to coaching and stay away from accounting, perhaps, Simon.
I mean, there's a reason in my book that I highlight the two most exciting and interesting figures in Barcelona history as Johan Cruyff, the man who invented modern football in modern Barcelona, and Messi. And Guardiola, I hugely respect, but he's really a disciple of Cruyff, a follower. He's not the original mind who invented the kind of football of modernity. He just gave it more rigor and system.
So look, let's come back to the fortunes of Barca and what is going to happen there now. Can they dig themselves out of this financial hole, or do they need something like the Super League to up the revenues? Simon?
The Super League is not going to happen. That's dead. I think that the main thing, the revenues are going to fall because sponsors are going to be less interested. There's going to be fewer tourists arriving in Barcelona for a weekend who say, hey, let's buy an overpriced ticket. But what you then need to do is cut costs. So they're trying to get rid of all their overpaid players. They won't be buying anyone. Your costs are going to sink. And you become more, from being a source of Real Madrid, you become more a source of Everton. And that means that you're lower in the pecking order and the big clubs will buy your best players. That, I think, is the near-term future.
Gavin, it occurs to me that it might be fun, might be interesting, just by way of comparison and context, to talk about transfers in the Irish context.
Is that what you think it'll be?
All right. Let's just say interesting comparative exercise.
So there have been obviously transfers among Irish players this summer, plenty of them. I think one of them has involved an actual transfer fee of Nathan Collins going from a young defender from Kildare, I think it is, or Dublin. Sorry, I've got that wrong. He's gone from Stoke in the Championship to Burnley in the Premier League for 12 million euros. And we may see in the next couple of weeks Liam Scales leave Shamrock Rovers to go to Celtic or another club in England. And if he does that, it will be a record transfer fee paid for the League of Ireland, which will be 600,000 euro, which I think Lionel Messi will have banked by tomorrow morning.
Right. Is there any way, has anybody ever suggested to you, Simon, a method by which the love could be spread around a little bit more evenly rather than concentrated in the hands of a few overpaid but very talented individuals?
I mean, writing about football for 30 years, this question keeps coming up. You know, why is it so unequal? Why is Barcelona much bigger than, a club in Dublin? And I don't think it's a problem because all these clubs have their own function and their own sort of fan base and reason for survival. So if you're Real Madrid or Barcelona, you're playing to win the Champions League. And, you know, if you're Cork, then you're playing maybe to qualify once for the Europa League. And that's very exciting, or to win the Irish League. And nobody expects, you know, Bohemians or Cork to win the Champions League. They don't have to. That's OK. So it's a kind of ecosystem where every club has its place. And, you know, Messi entertains the world, and you can support Messi, you can follow Messi, and you can follow Bohemians. It's not mutually exclusive.
Everybody should know their place, Gavin.
Yeah, that's exactly how, that's effectively how football has been run. But up to a point, you can't, I think that, like Simon says, a natural ecosystem, but it can't be codified, as you saw with the Super League. That was ultimately its downfall, was the fact that here were 12 clubs walling themselves up off from the rest of Europe by virtue of their status. So you still need the football pyramid, you need promotion relegation, you still need to be able to sell the dream that you might one day take your place among the nations of the earth, although in the reality you probably won't.
All right,
gentlemen, I agree with that.
Thank you both very much, Simon Cooper, Financial Times correspondent, and Gavin Cooney, sports writer for 42.ie. You're very good to join us this morning.